Because you know there's nothing better than starting a podcast episode after consuming large amounts of dairy.
No, it sounds good. It makes the voice all coagulated and very, I don't know. There's probably some attractive quality.
Did you just say coagulated?
Coagulated. Hey, I'm Derek.
And I'm Tanya.
We've got three kids. Rainy?
Yeah.
Emerson?
And introducing... We're set to learn about marriage, parenting, and whatever else comes up as we stumble through the joys and sorrows of life.
This is the journey of two young, homeschooled Christian parents exploring what we're teaching and learning while we grow ourselves and raise our kids.
I'm still eating my ice cream, so you have to introduce the podcast.
Hey, guys. This is Set to Learn, the no, I mean... show that is... always produced in a systematic way and released in a timely manner and not at all based upon our busy schedule, because this is our life, podcasting for you.
That's right. We serve the people.
And of course, we did not record an episode weeks ago and then forget to bring our iPad back on our trip, and therefore not be able to edit it for many times,
mm-hmm.
because we are adults and we are responsible and we manage our stuff.
Yeah, not only did it take us 2 to 3 weeks to record the last episode from when we released the previous episode, but then it also took us, well, I say us, it took me 3 weeks to edit the episode and...
Yeah, you can't blame me on that one.
But this
I
one,
really tried.
This one might actually be out in 2 weeks. And no, I shouldn't commit to that. You're right.
You can probably do it tomorrow in your free time.
Yeah, as I'm building a deck and everything. Well, we should get right into it because I know I have a lot of things that I've learned. But
I think I have three.
We need to get into maybe a pregnancy update first.
No, I'm not doing a pregnancy update.
No pregnancy update?
I don't feel like it's necessary, and
okay,
it tends to be generally sad. I'm a pregnancy is very happy, but
mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely like to meet this baby
soon.
Well, when she is fully developed, but I would like it to come quickly.
Yes, we would like it to feel soon.
It does feel soon. It's like, it's currently May, and then comes June, and then comes July, and then we have a baby in August. And June is really full. Like, we're going to be gone 2 of those weeks, so.
Yeah. So, I'm going to go first on stuff we've learned.
Cool.
Because I have.
I hope this that flows in well, because we just had a whole lot of nonsense.
Yes. I've learned how to curl hair, for one.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a long story, but Tanya needed her hair curled for the wedding, which was just after we recorded the last episode. And that was when I learned to curl hair. You taught me and trusted me not to burn your hair off right before a wedding. And that is a credit to you. And so thank you for that.
I think curling, it's harder to burn things. Like, bless my dear sister, but the many times that I have straightened her hair and clamped an ear in a straightener.
Oh, no.
I mean, I guess you can burn... I've burned my face before with a curling iron as a teenager, but anyways, mm-hmm. You did great.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've got another short one.
Go for it.
I've learned that I don't drink a ton of water because... of facial hair, which seems like a silly thing, but I don't think about the fact that, so I typically don't drink a lot of water, which I know I should, because it's good for you, and being well hydrated is a good thing.
He's never seen his pee not yellow.
No, and I have.
It alarms me when my pee is yellow.
you're not a typical person. Which doesn't mean that
There was a season with my pregnancy with Rainey where we weren't sure if our water at our house was good, which reminds me, you need to replace that bulb because it says that on the thingy downstairs.
It does.
For our
I have it on the counter.
Water infiltration system.
Mm-hmm.
Infiltration system.
The water is infiltrating the house.
Okay. It's late and it's been a day.
Episode title.
But anyways, we're blessed Eric. He was driving to his parents' house and getting water for me all the time because we weren't sure if our water here was safe to drink.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
So I know how much water I drink often. Mm-hmm. And it's like a gallon and a half very frequently a day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great because whenever I go in to have a baby, I'm like, I'm well hydrated and I haven't even had to get an IV port in because, I mean, that tends to be their main concern, like continual fluids. It also probably means that I pee on them a freaking lot when I push out a baby. So last time that was the one nurse that I hated. She was like, well, we should go try to empty your bladder, but I can't imagine that there's anything else in there. It's like, you don't tell someone that. She was a little rude. That was like the one bad nurse experience that I had. And then I got up and like hemorrhaged all over the place. And she's like, oh my goodness, we can't move you. And she did not have a good poker face. Anyways, otherwise I had all good nurses there. That was a really long rabbit trail. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. The actual like thing behind
that I learned is
drink
a lot with facial hair.
Yeah, because with facial hair, you can't get a good seal around a cup. And if you try drinking water too fast, which I tend to just like gulp water, like when I drink water, I just like down a glass in like 5 seconds. But then it dribbles out all over your face and beard, and you just don't get a good seal. Now today, after I shaved down to down to a mustache, I can drink water all day, no dribbles whatsoever. But with a beard, it is quite a different game.
Next fall, I'll try to buy you a straw.
Well, what I've decided to do, as I've been trying to drink more water, is I just have a Dunkin' Donuts, like a large Dunkin' Donuts plastic cup with a straw.
I'm sure that doesn't shed plastic over time.
And I just keep, and I use that straw to drink all the water, and I just keep refilling it and drinking out of that, which works great. Straws are awesome for beards.
If you are listening to this and you have a beard, please DM us or comment somewhere on one of our various accounts.
Yes.
And tell us if you too have problems drinking things or if Derek is just inept.
That would be the greatest turn on this. That nope, it turns out I'm the only one with this problem. Yes. Oh, that would be good. Yes.
It's good for razors or Derek, Darwinism and survival of the fittest and all that. Derek would be gone and shriveled away to nothing.
Email us on Snapstagram.
What's next?
Next, you should tell us about something that you've learned.
Okay. So this is not the most recent thing, but I read an article today about why, and I didn't read the whole article, so mm-hmm. If you go and read it and it's total crap, but it seemed to be legit, even though it was unfatherly. Anyways,
throwing some shade at fatherly.
Sorry, I'm getting kind of like heavy with where I find like information. It needs to be like triple checked.
You really have gotten like gotten really deep into the analyzing the source rabbit hole. Like,
but it's terrifying for me to podcast because I'm like, I'm going to say something really stupid and people are going to be like, you are an idiot and I'm not going to trust anything you say. And that's perfectly fine. Please fact check me and just don't call me an idiot.
You know, the nice thing is about our podcast at the moment is we don't have 6,000 listeners, so
yeah,
you're probably not going to get anything.
Anyways, we are rabbit trailing so bad. This is just like us hooking you for forever. What is this article about?
What is it?
So the next thing I learned is it was about why modern cribs look so much like jail cells.
Oh,
and it's because back in the day, children slept in Italian whiskey barrels. And that was like kind of the design. And they kind of look like They look like cages. And because we are so scared, I can send you the link if you would like.
Yes. Well, no, I'm just looking it up at the moment.
Because of like sleep stuff and SIDS and safe sleeping stuff, we're really scared to move away from that model that we've been following for decades. Okay. So because people bed shared back in the day, this is why I didn't read the whole article.
Oh, okay.
Because people bed shared back in the day, the women were really worried about rolling over and crushing their child. So they would, to avoid rolling over and crushing them, they would place half a whiskey barrel with three slats over their children, forming a sort of protective shell.
Interesting. Do they have an image on there? Because I see like what I'm looking at is like cribs made out of like slats of whiskey barrels that they actually look pretty cool.
No. And then it starts talking about like cribs that were iron and painted with lead based paint. And
oh, that's good. Yeah.
I think give
our children superpowers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what lead does.
Anyways, I have the article. I'll post it if you have any sort of interest in reading it.
Yes.
I just like was super intrigued by the fact that modern cribs evolved from Italian whiskey barrels, apparently.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Well, next thing I learned is that I am 180 pounds. This is something I learned on vacation, and it was a startling fact to me. Because I have always been that guy that is like underweight because it's just the way my build is. Like the doctors begging me to gain weight ever since I'm like a teenager and up. And but yeah, 180 pounds. I'm overweight. I forget where I am on BMI. I'm like 6 feet tall. But either way, I'm more than I should be. And so at some point I want to fix that. So
I persuade him to partake in my pregnancy eating habits.
Yeah, but it's
not in like my pregnancy throwing up habits. So this is where lose the track.
So
okay, but seriously, like how crazy it was. Growing up, I was like right below 100 pounds until I was like, I don't know. I think that I was like 16 and I like hit 100 pounds and was mm-hmm. there for the longest time because I was just small. And then for the last like however many years since I've been an adult, I've been at like 113 to 115, right in that range.
Mm-hmm.
And then with all of the weight that I lost, I almost dipped under 100 at one point, which was kind of terrifying. And I was also very weak and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm trying to make peace in my mind with probably hitting like 150, 145. Five by the end of this pregnancy, which is really weird when you've been at like I know that it's healthy like weight, but it's weird mm-hmm. to think about like
yeah.
I think with Rainey I was like 132 and Murray I was 135 or 140.
Mm-hmm.
But you like gain a little bit more each time, I feel like. Anyways. Yeah.
And we haven't given you like time to get your body back to where you want it to be.
Yeah, well, so. I do like hold on to a little bit of weight while I'm nursing.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I hit a point and I stall.
Mm-hmm.
With nursing, and since I've been nursing for my entire life. Anyways.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's where we are weight wise. Please tune in next week to hear about our immunization records.
I learned that vasectomy videos from the 80s are still being used
oh my goodness, so
in
bad.
Doctor's offices today. And they are amazing and they should never get replaced with anything else. So the pretext to this is getting a vasectomy, which is fun.
Probably don't ask someone that you don't really know if they're getting a vasectomy. Some people have asked and just assumed... of course, we wouldn't want any more kids. And we're not necessarily done. Like, we're just going to adopt or foster after this point to expand our family because
mm-hmm.
HG pregnancy with kids is really darn hard. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really wonderful kids out there.
Yeah.
Give them to me.
So anyway, I was in the doctor's office, and when you go in for a consultation, basically it's just, hey, this is what a vasectomy is. And no, it's pretty much not going to affect anything about your life except that you will stop making children. And no, for really, we mean this. And like lays out everything and all the like the risk factors and everything. But it's a very serious video done in the 80s, and it's just absolutely delightful. Short shorts and all. And
the few like seconds that you sent to me were like astonishing. So
Oh, and like the anatomy, like when they talk about the anatomy, like, oh, when the gets the
you cannot put that into this episode.
It's just, it's so frank and wonderful, and medical videos are great like that. So that's that. One more quick on my side is that Rainey feels empathy for video game characters. It's something that
Rainey
I learned.
Rainey feels empathy for everything.
Yeah, but it was something that like...
I'm not saying that like exasperatedly, like that's a strength. Mm-hmm. But
no, but I mean like she was, or I was helping her figure out how to roll around and attack things. She started to actually pick up moving around Banjo and Banjo-Kazooie. And the attack, the main attack is like a roll attack. So we were doing this a bunch, and she said, okay, I'm going to stop rolling because Banjo feels sick from rolling around.
Oh.
Like,
oh, my goodness, Derek. Today I was planting the garden, and she was like, what is this? I thought it was like a slug, and then I looked closer, and it was a dead baby bird.
Oh, that's, she was telling me about this.
Sitting on the side of our garden box, and the ants were eating it.
Oh.
And I wouldn't have known what it was, except she pointed it out, and I looked really closely. So mm-hmm. I was like, that's really sad, but it's dead. And so we picked it up on the trowel and buried it, and she went and got flowers and put it there.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept saying over and over after that, the mama birdie won't be able to find her baby. She's going to be so sad. Aww. And she, it was like her, like that's the connection she kept making. She's uh-huh. like, the mother will be so sad. The mother won't see her baby. She kept going back to that,
uh-huh.
which makes my heart feel very special that that was like the connection point that she thought about. But also dead birds are like one of the saddest things to me, too. I told her that. Anyways, she has all the empathy.
That's a lovely moment.
And transitioning from that into something that I learned.
Yes.
Today I tried taking, well, I've often taken both of the kids to the greenhouse, but it's been a while since I've gone, and Murray was not as mobile as he is now. He's kind of like lost his need to be nearby, and he's just like, I'm going to go see what I want to see type mm-hmm. of thing.
Here I
Way
go.
More than Rainey ever was, but
he just starts rolling around and attacking birds.
No, I think that I've like said this before, but I'm continually learning to view my struggles as my children's strengths. I mean, there's a different difference in perspective. That being like, I could think about how hard it is to have to chase two toddlers, or have two toddlers wanting to do two different things. Or I can think about the fact that Murray is adventurous and loves animals and wants to chase the corgi all over the place. And Rainey wants to sit and observe in a completely different place because she's an inquisitive and a watcher. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just like reframing with that perspective in mind makes such a difference in my day.
Yeah, it does. That was actually something that I forgot to put on my list, but I've been noticing over the last month that I haven't been grasping onto their joy in life as much, which makes everything seem like you're trying to fight against the machine a little bit of childhood.
Mm-hmm. This is my schedule. And you are a part of it.
Yeah, right. And I don't want to be doing that. And I've been trying to be a little bit more mindful of that and finding their joy, finding the joy of life, of the unexpecteds, of the randomness. I just need to stay mindful in that arena. So It's a good reminder.
Yeah. We need a yes day one of these times coming up because I've been like powering through so many things around the house recently, as have you,
mm-hmm.
which has been great, but we need a yes day.
Yep. One of the last things I've got is I got a new van at work. I got a new work van.
And a travel urinal.
And a travel.
I'm never pointing out anything at Walmart anymore and saying that is so weird. What kind of a person would buy that? Because Derek would be like, actually, I need that. And then you were going to make me carry it through Walmart.
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Hold on to your tights, listeners. But got a new work van, which is great. Since switching to a service technician role, I've been needing my own vehicle for a long time. They've been saying, you know, we're going to get you a vehicle. It was just a matter of when they, you know, had the funds or found the right vehicle. But it's Ford Transit. It is beautiful. It's got so much space. And I've been working heavily this month on customizing it just the way I like, which means I've learned a lot of things about customizing vehicles. Like I've learned how to install cruise control, which was a new one. That was fun. Install a big inverter, which is like hooking it directly up into the battery, which apparently in a Ford Transit, the battery is under the driver's seat, and like running all sorts of little wires around and screwing things to walls. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been one of those things that I'm kind of out of my depth when it comes to cars, but it's made me realize that, you know, given the right motivation, I could totally become a car person. I'm not going to, but this van's going to be about as close as I get. So that's been a lot of fun. Been learning a lot of stuff there. Oh, and the travel yard. I don't know that this is anything that I've particularly learned, but, well, I have learned over the years that being a service guy and having to go from stop to stop and like, you might be at way out in the boonies and there's not really a good place to, like a gas station that has a serviceable bathroom, or like they won't allow you to be in the bathroom. Or like when you get down into Baltimore, like city area, they'll have like a separate building with a bathroom that you need to get a key from an attendant, and then the attendant's never there, and then you really need to pee. And so anyway, this was why I needed the travel urinal, and it's so freeing.
I wish I was a man.
Yeah, well, they make them
Because I spend like 90% of my day peeing now.
They make them for women, but it is more clunky and it's not as nice. I understand the plumbing is not quite the same.
Do you? Do you really?
Well, I can imagine. I'm not going to go into detail imagining it right here, right now.
You should probably I imagine that it would be.
I feel imagine
your empathy
that it would
so
be.
Strongly these days for yeah? many things, but you have no idea. And let's leave it at that. So the last thing that I learned
yes.
is how to tip, which is kind of embarrassing,
yes.
but we have to talk about it anyways because unschooling. Basically,
yes.
I forgot how to tip. And on wedding weekend, I was out for a bachelorette party and I was paying for my bill and the bride's. And I'm like, Derek always tips because Derek always pays when we're out. I mean, it's coming from our joint bank account. But anyways,
I didn't realize that was the genesis for this, but that
yes.
makes sense.
Finances stress me out and I've learned a lot more about healthy finances. I don't know if we've talked about that before and come a long way with that. But I'm totally a hoarder and I enjoy dinner way more if I don't have to even like look at the bill and stuff. And like, I know where our finances are at, but I don't know. Anyways, mm-hmm. So Derek always takes care of that. And I totally texted him and I was like, I don't know what the tip is. And I was deeply embarrassed about this. So then I was laying in bed trying to do mathematical equations. 20 over 100 and this over that and what does X equal? Because that's like the closest thing that I was remembering to. Anyways, mm-hmm. So on our last date night, I was like, Derek, I freaking forget how to tip. And so he showed me his means of mathematical equations. But I still want to figure out what is X that I was doing, because I know that I used to know how to do these things that way. Mm-hmm. It's still bothering me. But anyways, all that to say, we forget knowledge over time that doesn't seem prevalent. Mm-hmm. And then if we have a desire to learn it, we totally do. And that is a slight push in the unschooling.
Yes, come over to the dark side. We have cookies made very poorly, I admit, by people who are still learning how to make cookies.
Made with powdered sugar.
They might be made with powdered sugar.
Oh my goodness.
Have we ever told that story?
We have.
Okay.
Derek once made chocolate chip cookies with powdered sugar instead of flour because I didn't have our containers marked, and I just the consistency is different. He was like, I thought that it was, so basically it was like butter and sugar with some chocolate chips. And it was just like a caramelized mess. Like the cookies all melded together and then hardened. And Derek's like, what did I do wrong? And it was sad because I think I was like pregnant at the time.
And you really wanted cookies.
And I really wanted cookies. And it was our last butter. And it was our last flour. Oh, yeah, we ran out of stuff. Then Sweet Soul went shopping, made it all right.
Yep. You know it. And now all the containers are labeled.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So,
this would be the part of the show where we might talk about some listener feedback. If you had questions or comments or whatever. And if you'd like to do that, you can go to Instagram and DM us on there at SetToLearn. Or you can go to settolearn.com/talk if you want to leave a voice message. We love those as well. We're up for questions, snide remarks, comments. You know, all that kind of stuff. So we'd love to hear from you. And without further ado,
Our topic.
Today.
I keep on telling Derek that he promised to talk about unschooling, and he is to one of these days.
Yep.
But still this topic kind of leads into parts of that.
Yeah.
So
kind of hitting all the fringes.
Yeah. And it's something that we've been talking about a lot recently. So my sweet sister shared with me Stuff You Should Know's podcast about free range parenting and asked what I thought about it.
Which we will link in the show notes.
Yep. And so, Elisa, if you're listening to this, it's all going to get boring after this because we already talked about this. I kind of feel bad for family because we discuss the stuff that we're excited about and then we end up like podcasting about it. And now it's going to be boring because it's going to be repetitive. But there's also going to be new information. So
yeah,
stick around.
These are going to be more developed thoughts and things. And there's always little details you haven't picked up.
So, Derek, what? Do you want to give like a brief definition of what free range parenting is?
Free range parenting means that the children aren't kept in cages, but they're allowed to go out into the field to eat grass and stuff, and so they're not confined to the chicken house.
General child byproducts sell for more.
Yes, right, exactly. The eggs are much higher value.
I was going to say meat, but that gets real dark real
fast. I'm not going to go there. So free range parenting is, let me think about how to define this succinctly. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just ramble and we'll get there. But it is basically trusting your child to be able to do more than you think they might be able to. Shall I give the example of the person with the subway and the child and the thing?
No.
No, you want to do that?
Well, I just want to get there naturally.
Okay.
So basically, free-range parenting is the opposite of helicopter parents in a lot of ways.
Defining helicopter parents as parents
all
who
up,
kind of...
all up in kids' business, very, like, overstructuring time.
Kind of being overprotective.
Stuff You Should Know kept saying, like, if your child falls, they're like right there to pick them up again and stuff, which I don't like that example, because if my child falls, I want to like at least check in with them and be like, are you okay? Because I want my child to do that for me if I fall. Like,
right.
General
but there's
concern and empathy. But I'm not going to like necessary. And we're kind of in the stage still where, like, you scoop them up, but you're like, you okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference. There are, I will react differently for different falls. Like, mm-hmm. if it is off of a chair and the child hits their head and they're, you know, screaming, I will react differently than, you know, if they kind of stub their toe. And then I'll kind of mosey over and be like, oh, you okay? Because sometimes they just need like 10 seconds to process, which I want to give them that mm-hmm. before I kind of go over and scoop them up. So, like, it's about reading what your children can do for yourself, for themselves, and allowing them to start doing more on their own instead of being the person to take, like, there's also the term steamroller parent as mm-hmm. well, which actually is, has been associated with, like, the college fraud story I brought up mm-hmm, mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. last podcast, where the parent just wants to do everything to get all of the obstacles out of the kid's way, so they can, you know, do whatever they want to do.
Just coast along.
Yeah.
So free-range parenting is less about structure or scheduled, more freedom, less classes, intuitive in the sense that you're kind of seeing what your child can do and allowing it. So mm-hmm. it's going to look different for everyone. Trusting them to handle their struggles to an extent, etc. So the conversations kind of came out of a mother who allowed her 9-year-old son to ride on the subway by himself. And her name uh-huh. was Lenore Skenazy. I think that's how you say it. Lenore.
We'll go with that.
Anyways, we'll put the link to this article that she wrote in the New York Sun, because she's a journalist, about her son who kept asking her if he could ride the subway system. And one day he was pestering her and she was finally like, okay, here's some money for, here's the card for the subway system. Mm-hmm. Here's some money for a payphone if you get lost. Here's the map. You know what you're doing. Like, and then let him go. And he arrived home, and the quote from the article was ecstatic with independence. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, she's written books, or a book, I guess, now about this and about the importance of free-range parenting, which is the term that she coined. But there's this idea that, quote, the dignity of risk.
Yes.
Giving that gift to your child, giving your child the gift of the dignity of risk, slowly giving more freedom to your kids as you continue to gauge what they're capable of. And people, of course, said, what if your child had been kidnapped or murdered or something, you know, never mm-hmm. come home?
Yeah.
And she would be like, of course I would be deeply upset. Of course I would be so sad about that. But that type of an instance happening would be so rare. And the realization that risk happened to my child, she wasn't sure if she would take on the personal blame of that. Mm-hmm. So stuff you should know goes on to talk about helicopter parents and how they face more fear in the world, and then talked about where that came from. And I think that she talks about this too, maybe in her book, but the studies that 1979 to 1981, there were some high profile child murder cases that changed parents' minds. And that aligned with the same time of the start of cable news, which profits off of bad news and parents' fears, which is the same thing that is true today.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and the thing specifically about the cable news channels is, like, their 24-hour news channels.
Yeah.
Like,
so
the first time 24-hour news channels yeah. were a thing.
So before then, it was like you would hear about something happened that was bad with, you know, maybe if something was really bad that happened in your community, but you wouldn't necessarily hear nationally. And there was all of these high-profile murder cases that happened to kids around that time. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Or they became high profile.
Yeah.
Due to.
Yeah, but there were some really unpleasant things that happened then.
Yeah.
And I should have put, like, a trigger warning before some of this conversation. I'm going to give a little bit of data about it's data from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And for me, it's comforting. But if hearing about anything negative happening to kids is triggering for you, if you're facing like postpartum anxiety or something like that, it's okay if you want to like skip ahead 5 minutes or something. For me, it was comforting, though, because I think that we all have this image in our heads of our kids being scooped off the street by strangers. And the data out there is that, that they also said that case laws also extended in negligence so that you could sue if your child caused like a broken arm, and everyone started thinking like lawyers around that time. So there was more concern that if you just let your child roam free or like have a latchkey kid, which I didn't know what that term meant before, but basically that your kid would be out all day on their own and only coming home, you know, in the evening. If something bad happened and somebody else's kid was involved, you started to have the fear that you could be sued for it.
Yeah.
Which is also funny that like that generation remembers kids being like, you tore my shirt, I'm going to sue you. My dad's going to sue you. Like, my dad's going to make you pay, which is like when those types of phrases started coming out. Anyways, data from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is 1% of missing children cases are non-family abductions. And that number is including like family friends. So like when they say the other percentage is like literally only counting family.
Like not like not closely like friends. Related family.
Yeah. Like so you would think that a lot of the time like it would be a friend of the family outside of that. But that like anyways. That's a really high number. Specifically in 2017, there was 270 kids out of the 27,000 missing children in the U.S. That were kidnapped, but the vast majority of that number ran away. Most missing children cases are cases where the children run away or are kidnapped by a family member or like, you know.
Yeah.
Which is so hard for me nowadays. Maybe I said this on our last podcast. I feel like in the fear-mongering conversation, so many times I see people post Amber Alerts or missing something, and they're resolved. They've been resolved, and the child was with, like, a family member or something and was found perfectly fine, but people are still sharing it, like, a week later. And then 1980 to 2008, kids under the age of five that were killed by someone, 63% of those were by parents, 23% were by male acquaintances, like the mom's boyfriend, and then 7% were other relatives, and that leaves 3% for strangers. So again, like, if there's 1% that are killed by people, that like doesn't make me feel better, you know, but seeing those types of statistics, and we carefully guard the people in our kids' lives, should give you a little bit, hopefully, of confidence and hope.
Yeah, definitely.
When they were talking about cable news, I totally like paused the podcast at that point and went off on a long search about if like the world is getting less violent or more violent, because this is. So I didn't like actually finish the podcast until like, well, today was part of finishing it. But I grew up loving listening to Steven Pinker, who is a, I think he's a psychologist, but he's written so many books. He's won so many like prizes from all of these. I think he went to Stanford. He's spoken at Harvard so many times, which is when I have normally listened to his talks, not at Harvard, but recorded. Plus, he's a really great speaker, super easy to listen to, and he uses so much data, which I love. So,
And if you're into ASMR, check me out. There's that too.
I know. Well, Derek was listening to me with him the other night, and he was like, I get why you enjoy this guy's voice, because he's really easy to listen to. He's not like graded. And he has humor all the time. I really enjoy his lecture about language, specifically swearing. If you were like sensitive to swearing, don't listen to it, because there is some swearing involved. For the case of of definition and stuff, but he talks about like how swearing impacts our brain and the brains of those around us, which is super interesting to me. Anyways, but he has several talks about violence, if the world is getting better or worse. And I also listened to his panel, which was what you were listening to. Mm-hmm. He had a panel that he led at an esteemed college. It may have been Stanford. I don't remember what it was. With a bunch of experts in the field of violence. There was someone who studies brain scans of homicide, homicide committers.
Yeah.
Someone who studies like tribal people groups that are violent.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who studies like the impact of terrorism versus the impact of peaceful protest in large numbers. Anyways, very, very interesting. And you should go listen to it if you're into that.
Yeah.
But in his history of violence discussion, he started out with data on the decline of homicide and how he started out with like talking about how frequently torture was used in olden times. And then during the European Enlightenment, second half of the 18th century, we see country after country abolishing torture as a way to deal with criminals, including the United States in its famous prohibition to cruel and unusual punishment in the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Mm. We see how war has dropped significantly, and that doesn't feel like it because we're hearing about it all the time. He had a lot of like, he had a slide with a lot of like zeros and, zero wars between Western European countries when before 1945, there had been two a year for the last 600 years,
mm-hmm.
which feels really significant.
Wow.
There haven't been like wars between two, not established countries, but, two
first world countries, like
developed countries.
There you go. Developed.
Attitudes on corporal punishment have changed. # spanking. domestic violence and rape statistics have gone down significantly, etc. And then he lands because he's an atheist, which bless his soul. So many of his psychology discussions are so, so close. But he's an atheist. So like he's right there and he's like, well, this is the case, but I don't like understand why this is. And I'm like, I do. Like he talks about in his violence conversation, he talks about the things within our brain that cause violence mm-hmm. and then the things within us that hold back violence. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes, sin, nature, and common grace. But, you know, like...
It can't possibly be because God is sanctifying the earth.
And he's so big on data, too. But he ends with, like, he talks about how much violence comes from morality. And, you know, mm-hmm. people who feel strongly about something pushing. And, I mean, I understand, like, Christian crusade wars and stuff like that. Like, that stuff is out there, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the harsh punishment... And the violence in the Bible, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But then with zero data at the end, he's like, so really we need less morality. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm pretty sure if we count up like the instances of morality versus like other instances that morality would far outweigh the other instances. And I was like, but where's the data, dude? Like you have data for everything else. Anyways.
Yeah, his unfortunately, the atheists have an advantage on the data side because they just haven't really existed up until like the last couple hundred years, really, in a major sort of data point. And so they just happen to be getting in here as technology lets them become less reliant on a supernatural being, or at least they think so.
But it is interesting because, like, we as believers think that the world is going to get worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to die. Kind of.
No, wait. Say that again?
I mean, I think that people say, like, the end time signs are going to be, like, the world getting worse. And I think that you're going to see that environmentally and you're going to see that... you know, war-wise and...
Which is something I disagree with you on, but that's okay.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I was thinking through this because I need the Bible passages to back it up, and you never know if it's like, is that the Bible? Is that Left Behind from my childhood, you know?
Well, you are dispensational, so you tend to be more on the Left Behind side of things. Because you would believe in pre-trib rapture, right?
I'm really hoping for it, dude.
It would sure be nice.
Is that an okay answer?
I'm actually trending more towards the complete opposite side of the spectrum.
I hope you're wrong.
Which is that the world is getting better because, you know, God's kingdom is here. We are working in God's kingdom and bringing about which would be, what is the term for it? It's not dispensational, it's not amillennial, it's post-millennial.
I had friends who believed that growing up, and I was like, man, you crazy. I can't believe I'm married to one of them now.
I mean,
but we can talk about it more.
I'm not solidly...
we're going to get into the weeds now before I lose my train of thought, just completing this thought really quick.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's totally in the weeds, and it's not something that I'm like super set on. It was just an interesting aside.
Yes. Well, we can talk about all of our theology.
Post-show.
Yeah. Anyways, Steven Pinker is an atheist, though, and he wrote The Enlightened Mind, and is very big on the data that the world is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
There is that war in my mind, like, is the world supposed to be getting better? Is the world getting worse? And then with the conversation and the data, I'm like, you know, is... So I know that there was a lot of things back in the day that weren't reported, I think. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure there was incidents of, like, abuse for latchkey kids that probably never got reported, which is terrifying. Because so many people are like, oh, like, nothing happens. Like, well, you don't know, because it was kind of like, it feels like the age of silence. Like, when you hear about so much abuse and, like, that happened in the workplace towards women and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then I'm like, how much might happen now that isn't being reported?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much of that data is skewered? Because I don't like the idea of not knowing all the data, and there's no way for me to know all the data because I'm not God and I'm not in control of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I wonder how much is just normalized nowadays, too, like things that would have been considered egregious. How do you say that word?
Egregious?
Egregious.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm here for you.
Things that would have been like, yeah. I was just talking to someone about feeling like pedophilia might be around the corner to be legalized. And they're already talking that it's like a mental state, something you're born with that you can't get rid of, which is how we started out with LGBTQ. I was just talking about, like, it will probably eventually be like, you know, if my toddler knows that if Rainey thinks that she's a boy and I'm supposed to trust her, then, like, why would she not be able to give consent for something like pedophilia?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I know that that feels like a big stretch, but also, like, people are getting transformative surgeries for their children now. Anyways, and I have seen some articles pop up about pedophilia being taught as something that you can assign to yourself in schools. But I've seen it on all Christian sites, and I never know what's sensational and what's not.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing is, for a subject like this, I haven't gotten to research a lot more, but it's hard to find data for some conversations like this, because when, like, people are saying the science is coming out, it's not necessarily report worthy for a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then we also just have, I feel like we have a better, like, legal system and better government and better ways of handling crime than we used to back in the day.
Yeah.
There are they see huge advantages to free play, though, because back in the day, like, where kids used to be employed working on farms and stuff, they saw a huge rise when you allowed free play and stopped working your children to death. And now, I mean, set to learn. Stuff You Should Know is saying that we're kind of turning our kids into CEOs nowadays. Like every yes. minute of their day is scheduled out for them and they need to go from one lesson to the other and we're carting them around. And not that giving them advantages is bad, but also like free play is totally out the window and that's super important for brain development and stuff. And also they were saying how important it is to spend time in your peer group and that's how you learn most things. I'm not sure if I agree with that because I feel like I learned the most as a teenager spending time with people older and wiser than me who invested in my life.
I think it depends on where you're at developmentally and like it probably depends on the person at their time of life. Cause I can see like once you hit teenage years, it's kind of nice to be, well, especially if you're not used to being independent.
I guess I did have deep discussions with my age range.
Yeah, because there you're safe to throw things around and be wrong because you're all relatively at the same knowledge bracket.
I did not feel challenged in my age range, and that feels really hoity-toity to say that. But
well, it might be true, but I can see the benefit of either.
But I do think, like, nowadays, if Rainey is having a play date with someone and they get into a little scuffle and nobody's, like, screaming in pain or something, mm-hmm. I kind of try to let them work it out.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to let that with Rainey and Emerson, too, without setting bad habits. There was a point today where I was pooping, so there's no way that I could get involved. And I guess Murray wanted something, and both of them were just swiping at each other, saying, no. No, no, no. Just hitting back and forth. It was so pathetic to watch. I'm like, oh my goodness, I used to do this. Like, I mean, this is language skills and like communication building, but oh my goodness. Like,
yeah.
And I was just like from the other room, I'm like, if you keep doing that, somebody's going to get hurt and you're going to like be bummed eventually. And indeed, like, eventually Murray like walked away crying, came over to me for sympathy, and I'm like, listen, dude, I saw it happen. And anyways.
Yep. Good times.
Parenting.
Yeah.
I don't let my kids like beat each other up.
Yeah,
especially because Rainey is getting really good at blaming things on Murray. I didn't knock that book off the shelf. Rainey, I just saw you knock it off the shelf. It wasn't me. It's okay. No, I saw you knock it. See how it's on the floor? Murray did it. No, Murray's been sitting on my lap reading this book with me the entire time this went down. True. The logic is so out the window.
Oh my goodness.
And there is data too on that like toddler logic. What was that that we were... That was another Steven Pinker thing where they said that they did a... They did a... what is it? Experiment.
Study.
They had... Yeah, they had a box of M&Ms on the table. Am I going way off course? They had a box of M&Ms on the table.
That's fun. This is
and
great.
And it was filled with ribbons and they let a toddler come in. This is just cruel. And the toddler opened up the box of M&Ms and it was full of ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like... They put the ribbons back in and let another toddler come in. And the other toddler's like, oh, M&Ms. And the other toddler would say, no, it's full of ribbons or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would ask the first toddler, what did you think was in the box of M&M? What did you think was in the box when you came in? And they would say ribbons.
Oh, because they had been prompted by the other toddler, even though they thought.
No, the first toddler that came in expecting M&Ms.
Yes.
Open the box to find ribbons, and then they asked the child, what did you think was in the box? And the child said, ribbons.
Oh,
because it was
okay.
Like
so it's the
their
same
reality.
Child.
Yeah, their reality had been switched with the knowledge of what had happened almost.
Yeah.
And the logic is almost flawed at the beginning. Like, I see the reality and I see what I really want. And I see this happening with Rainey sometimes, not saying that I don't hold her accountable to lying. But I do think sometimes she really believes herself that something happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the book incident. That was too.
Yeah,
like,
that was blatantly. Was a little bit much.
When enough time passes, though, I think a toddler can convince themselves of anything.
Yeah. But along with the free play thing, I mean, the free play stuff has become significant enough that, like, schools are trying to emulate as much of this as possible, too. Like, I know our local school district is really focusing on free play as an important part of learning as well, just with, like, the...
Learning stations versus...
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, as someone who's opposed to the public school system, I still find a bit misguided because it's a public school system. But that's me, not them. So... But yeah, like, this stuff is recognized as being more important, and I do think the free range aspect of parenting really needs to come back, and we need to figure out some way to get over our fear of litigation and
fear. That is a part of it, though, because there is a fear of negligence, because Child Protective Services is the one that decides. Like, if your child is walking down the road and someone calls it into the police, because that's probably what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. CPS gets to decide if you are being negligent or not. Yeah. And they don't necessarily know your child.
I will say, like, as kind of a counter to that, that there was, as an unschooling story I was hearing a long time ago, where this person's family was not supportive of them doing unschooling, and they thought they were completely corrupting their children. So occasionally they would get CPC calls on them. Like Child Protective Services,
CPS
calls, like, they come over and they see the kids running around and they're really happy and, you know, doing their unschooling stuff. So it's not necessarily typical things, but the CPS person is like, yeah, I mean, your kids seem really happy and it seems like a functional household. And
okay. Great. But on the other side of this, Stuff You Should Know talked about a mother who was working, a single mother who she was put in jail for a week and her child was taken from her because she was working and her 9-year-old was playing at home alone during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, CPS makes that call.
Yeah,
and
that's, yeah.
Interestingly, though, Utah rewrote what they described negligence as in kind of in favor of free parenting.
Oh, cool.
And maybe we'll see that more with state regulations. But, you know, my general rule of thumb is that I would much rather CPS caught more than they should than less than they should, I think.
Maybe.
I know that there's really sad situations, but I think that they tend to resolve themselves. Also, there's a lot of, like, that's not really fair because I have so much privilege and so it's easy for me to say that. And that's not, I take it back.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, there is a lot of nuance there, I think. I think you're right about that.
Anyways, I don't really have a nice way to wrap that up. I mostly have information that I am still processing through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have strong feelings about anything violent ever happening to my child and having to live with the thought of what I should have done differently afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I'm freaking out about going to Canada and worried that my child is going to drown in a lake. I don't know how I would make peace with myself afterwards, no matter what because a large part of it is because I have postpartum anxiety and prenatal anxiety. I mean, like, I have, like, so many hormones around. I want to control everything.
Yeah.
That's not possible. And my brain will get healthier soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that. And I'm not going to be the one who makes all the judgment calls. But at the same time, there's so much positive in gauging what your child can do and allowing them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what you think. Do you want free-range kids? Or not? What would that look like for you, maybe? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to hear them. Again,
We don't really have any, like, we aren't facing, like, deep, dangerous situations because our kids are both toddlers. So a lot of this is just ideology alone.
Mm-hmm.
But we do let our kids fall on their heads quite a bit with the risk warning.
I love you. Thank you so much for doing
Addie
this
says hi.
Hello, Addie. Welcome to the party. Thanks for listening. If you want to follow or talk to us, you can do that on Instagram at SetToLearn or leave us a voice message at SetToLearn.com/talk and you could be on the show. But until next time, keep learning. Do we want to talk quick about post-mill versus...
No, we're not talking about this on the podcast.
Just for the end, for after the credits.
I'm right, you're wrong. Okay, that's good. Put that into the podcast.